They will regulate the militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. In just a moment here, we're going to be talking with Eric Delpert from LEPD Farms and Range out in Ohio. I was talking with Eric via text yesterday, and I said, you know, why don't you come on the program? I mean, it's been a little bit more than 6 months here since the second term of the Trump administration kicked off. How have things changed for you as a FFL, for you as a gun store owner? I mean, obviously, we have heard that the agency is no longer, the ATF being the agency in question, no longer enforcing the zero tolerance policy against FFLs. Things like the Demand 2 program have gone away. But, you know, are you really seeing any difference day to day? So I think it's going to be a fascinating conversation. Take a look and a listen. Eric, thanks very much for coming on the program. It's good to see you.
Always good to be here, Cam. Great to see you.
Absolutely. I apologize that I can't join you on the radio show this weekend, but I'm really, really glad that you could join me on Cam and Company today. And as I told the audience, we were chatting via text yesterday, and I thought, you know, now is a really good time to, I think, you know, kind of take stock of where we are. We've had a few months with the new administration. We have seen some announced changes within the ATF, including a new acting ATF director. And the rescission, supposedly, of some of the rules that were put in place under the Biden administration. So let me ask you, I mean, as an FFL, have you noticed a difference between how things are being done at the ATF in terms of your interactions now than, let's say, a year ago?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we saw it really almost immediately. Probably one of the biggest things was, and I know we have talked about it before on your show, we were part of that Demand 2 program that we got thrown into a few years back, which was a totally erroneous program that ultimately put our names alongside of other stores in the country out there in USA Today as a gun store that was selling guns to criminals, which just wasn't true. But we were notified in April of this year that we no longer had to be a part of that program. So we saw some of those effects immediately. And then obviously right after that, the entire Demand 2 program was abolished. So we are seeing things firsthand from the ATF right here at the store.
That's good. And, you know, for folks who have maybe were not aware of Eric and I's previous conversations, I'd encourage you to go back and check out some of the past Cam and Company interviews with Eric, because we don't need to get into all of the details here, but you actually went through and you looked at, all right, so you guys say that I, you know, sold crime guns. Well, let's take a look at, you know, what these guns actually were, right? And these were not guns that were used in crimes. These were guns that might have been traced. But in one case, I think it was a found firearm, right? In one case, it was a gun that I believe it had been taken to another FFL and the trace had to be performed before it could be returned to its original owner. Am I getting that right?
They were all those scenarios were there. I mean, probably some of the biggest ones were, I mean, there's a very big problem here in Columbus with juveniles stealing firearms from vehicles. And so there were three or four traces of firearms that had been stolen from a customer's vehicle. But that trace obviously came back to us because that's where the firearm was purchased. But then we got dinged for that when we had absolutely nothing to do with it. But there was a lot of cases like that. There was a case where a customer had a local agency hold the guns for safekeeping while he was going through a divorce. That we got dinged for that crime gun, as they put it. So, yeah, we went through line by line and pointed out to them specifically. And they agreed. I mean, they said, yeah, the definition is kind of loose, but you're still on the program. So it was great to see us finally off of that. And it's not that we don't want to, you know, work with the ATF to get the bad guys off the street and go after bad FFLs. But this was horrible. I mean, it was going after the good guys.
Yeah. And this was by design. I mean, especially getting that information to USA Today. And I think it was it Everytown for Gun Safety that was actually a part of that as well? Yeah. So, you know, this was a campaign to demonize gun stores. And even though the ATF spokesman in that USA Today story said, look, not every gun that's traced is used in a crime. Not every gun that's used in a crime is traced. And being on this Demand 2 list is not evidence that the FFLs have done anything wrong. The USA Today reporter and certainly gun control groups like Everytown ignored that and said, oh, no, you guys are supplying crime guns to criminals, right? You're part of the pipeline. And, I mean, that was right. So this was about vilifying gun stores that were on that list and gun store owners like yourself portraying you as part of the problem. When, as you say, you know, ideally, FFLs are going to be working with the ATF to address straw purchases, to address firearms trafficking, right? You guys are part of the solution. You're not part of the problem.
Absolutely. And the way that was even locally here in Columbus, when, you know, finally when the Dispatch picked up on the article, I think the title was, you know, is your local gun store one of the ones selling guns to criminals?
Right.
Yeah. You know, and it's so ironic, especially with us, because we're owned by law enforcement. We have arguably arrested or been a part of more arrests of felons and gun trafficking rings and all kinds of stuff. And for that allegation, it was really asinine. So, I mean, it's good to see that that's gone now.
I mean, listen, the Washington, D.C. Police Department was on the demand to list, right? Because they were the only FFL in Washington, D.C. for a while. So every gun transferred lawfully went through the MPD. And so, yeah, you know, any gun that was traced in Washington, D.C. was tied back to the MPD. So they were on the list. So I'm glad to see that that demand to program has gone away. It's not that the ATF is turning a blind eye to gun trafficking or to straw buys. But again, this was a program that put FFLs under additional oversight for no legitimate reason. And again, kind of painted them with this brush of criminality with no legitimate purpose to it whatsoever. So I'm glad to see that that has gone away. One of the things that's sort of, I guess, up for debate right now, you know, we saw the announcement that the zero tolerance policy is being undone. Gun Owners of America filed a legal brief this week arguing that the DOJ actually isn't backing down off of at least their argument that they have the authority to institute these zero tolerance policies. The Justice Department, I saw today, pushing back on that, saying, no, the policy is over. I don't know if you've been subject to any ATF inspections since the Trump administration began, but have you had any dealings with ATF field investigators? And if you have, has that been different than experiences in the past?
No, we actually haven't. We haven't had any firsthand knowledge of investigators, you know, in these last 6 or 7 months. I will tell you, though, in talking to some friends at the ATF, you know, verbally, they've told me, hey, look, we're not going after some of that ridiculous stuff that we were forced to do before. And a lot of the agents didn't want to do it before. I mean, it was mandated. I mean, one of the examples that I use, I mean, this is how crazy it got. In Ohio, there were FFLs that were getting sent to revocation because they had accepted a form of identification during COVID that had expired. And ironically, at that time, it was during COVID, our governor had said, hey, look, if your driver's license expires in the next 6 months, we're adding a year to it or something like that because the BMVs were closed. So we had no other choice, but sometimes you accepted a license that was showing expired, but by, you know, order from the governor, it was still good. You could still drive on it. Some of these stores had got sent to revocation because they accepted a license that was expired. And their argument was, hey, look, that's, you know, we're federal. That was a state issue. It's expired. We're sending you to revocation. And we had firsthand knowledge of that happening in Ohio. So that craziness has hopefully gone away.
You know, and again, I mean, these violations are supposed to be willful violations, right? And that was the problem. Under zero tolerance, anything and everything was deemed to be willful. If you, you know, abbreviated a county rather than spell it out, if you transposed a number wrong on an address, all of those things were considered willful violations. If you follow the governor's directive, right, that these licenses are still valid, that was a willful violation of ATF policy, which, again, as you say, I mean, that is the ridiculous nature of this policy. And we saw the number of revocations increase exponentially once that policy was put in place. Now DOJ says that those individuals who lost their licenses have the chance to reapply. Get those FFLs reinstated. And I hope that, you know, your friends, I don't know what happened. I don't know what the outcome of that revocation hearing was, but I hope if they did lose their license, that they'll be able to get their license back.
Everyone that I was familiar with, none of them lost their license. But, you know, after $10,000 to hire attorneys and everything else, it was found in their favor. But again, it was the impact on the gun stores to come up with that and defend themselves on something that was just crazy. I mean, we are all for, let's go after any FFL who's doing something to, illegally put firearms in the hands of the bad guys. We'll be on front lines and helping that. But it's just stuff like this that was, it was a waste of time for the agents. And they'll tell you that as well. But hopefully now that's refocused and we can start, going after the stuff that's important.
All right. So beyond the ATF, I mean, I want to ask how are things just generally you think of the industry right now? We've seen, the 63-month long streak, 1 million guns a month transferred has officially come to an end, according to the National Shooting Sports Foundation. I know that's not great news for retailers like yourself, but how do you feel about the state of the industry at the moment?
You know what? It's crazy, Cam, because obviously the industry is down. I mean, there's some people saying 15%, 20%. We're certainly seeing it here. But, the flip side of that is we know we have an administration now who backs us, who backs the Second Amendment. And I don't want to say, I mean, it's certainly not good for business, but I think it's going to come back as the economy comes back. And I think, too, in some regards, it's almost a little bit of a needed reset. I'm seeing some prices start to come down. I mean, we're still working off of some stuff that is, the impact of the riots of 2020 and some of that, pricing that was just crazy. Some of that, I think, is going to start to come down, start to be in check a little bit more. And if that's the end result, and people start coming out and buying more because the economy is getting better, but the prices are lower, then that's not a bad thing. We're willing to weather the storm for the good of the whole.
And you're one of those, I won't say that, unique, because there are other gun stores and ranges, but are you seeing, obviously we're seeing that dip on the retail side, right? Are you seeing a decline in participation on the range side of things, or are people still coming out in training? Are they still going out and shooting on a regular basis?
You know what? They still are. Ironically, and it's funny you mentioned that, because, we keep a close tab on our classes. And in Ohio now, you don't have to have a CHL license to be able to carry concealed. You can carry under, constitutional carry. So when that happened, we saw an immediate dip in our CHL classes, our concealed handgun license classes. But recently, those classes have been filled again. So, I think there's still people out there. There's still people in the shooting industry that are coming out. It's just that in more of the retail sales. Now, I will say one of the things that we're fortunate to be a part of is that we deal a lot in law enforcement sales. And so that segment of the business is still busy. I mean, we're, and especially right now with what's going on with the SIG P320, it's keeping us busy on the backside with agencies looking to possibly get into new duty firearms.
Is that, I was going to say, how widespread is that phenomena, you think, at the moment?
You know what? We're seeing a huge impact. And I don't know. I mean, we reported on our show. I know you've talked about it. I don't know what the answer is with the 320. I know there's a lot of anecdotal things going on. There's a lot of stuff that makes you say, wow, is there something wrong? But now what we're seeing, and I just talked to an agency right before we came on today, it's becoming a liability issue. So if an agency has the P320 in their holsters and something were to happen, it's out there so much now that the administrators are saying, you know what, we can't take that liability, because they're going to say, hey, you knew there was a problem, or you should have known. And so proactively, a lot of these agencies are looking to get out of them, which it's sad from SIG standpoint. It's kind of the reality of it right now. Something else that's kind of, we didn't foresee it at the time, was oftentimes when we do agency duty firearms, the transitions, we'll buy back the old firearms from the agency. Well, in this environment, we're not going to be on the front lines of buying back P320s, not knowing what's going to happen with them. So it adds a whole nother layer of complexities for these agencies who are looking to get into new guns.
Is there a dominant model that that other agencies are adopting in place of the 320?
It's the big three. I mean, it's between Glocks, Smith & Wesson's, and FN. We're big on the FN side of things. The agency that I'm with actually went to the FN 509 a couple years back. We've sold a lot of agencies into it. But really, I mean, the big three is what we hear consistently. It's Smith, Glock, and FN.
All right. Good to know. Eric, listen, man, I always appreciate you joining us on the program. Love talking to you. And I think we said, second week in September, I'm going to be joining you on the radio, right? How can folks
get
you?
Yes, sir. I have my calendar.
How can folks check out the radio show? Because you don't have to be in Ohio, right? You are online.
We are online. We're on Facebook. We're on YouTube and through our website. The name of the show is On Target, and you can hit it right at lepd.com, or you can search On Target Radio Show on Facebook and YouTube, and we're out there.
Awesome. Eric, man, always good talking to you. Thanks so much. We'll do this again soon.
All right. Thanks, Cam.
My thanks to Eric for joining me on the program. Looking forward to having him back again here very soon. Right now, let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there with a case out of Missouri. Here's the headline. Belton shooting victim calls for systemic change after violent offender shoots her. Turns out the violent offender who's been arrested in connection with this case, an individual well-known to law enforcement, 41-year-old Jeffrey Arzola, first caught police attention in, more than 20 years ago, I guess, when he was 14. Charged with a second-degree murder for firing a rifle into a crowd of people, killing an 18-year-old. He was sentenced at that time to 25 years in prison after being certified to be tried as an adult. Instead, he served 7 years in juvenile detention and then got 5 years probation. Now, he's run into a lot of trouble since then, but most recently, he is accused of shooting a woman named Brittany Sweeney back on August 11th. Sweeney says that she and her boyfriend had gotten into an argument when they were in her car. They eventually parted ways. Her boyfriend exited the vehicle and left on foot. She ended up driving back to her house in Belton. A couple hours later, her boyfriend shows up with Arzola and another individual, a woman. The argument continues, apparently escalates to the point where Brittany Stewart said, "Heck with this, I'm leaving." She got in her car. She tried to drive away. And as she was doing so, she says Arzola fired 3 shots at her, hitting her in the foot. Again, he's now charged with a couple of felonies in relation to this incident. But Stewart wonders why he was out to begin with. I mean, in addition to this second-degree murder charge, to which Arzola was sentenced to 25 years, since then, as I mentioned, he's gotten into numerous run-ins with the law, including at least 2 incidents where he was indicted for being a felon in possession of a firearm. One case, he was convicted, but only received 18 months probation. This was 2012, charged with criminal possession of a firearm by a felon. 18 months probation. Now, this had been referred to the federal courts. Theoretically, he could have gotten 10 years behind bars. More than likely, under sentencing guidelines, would have been 4 or 5 years. But he wouldn't have gotten 18 months probation. And then after that, he's been convicted of second-degree property damage, got a DUI, 3 drug-related crimes in 2014, 2015, 2016. Once again, indicted for being a felon in possession of a firearm during a prostitution sting in that case. Sweeney says this man should never be let out of prison again. Well, I mean, listen, second-degree murder is not eligible for the death penalty or even life without the possibility of parole. But he did apparently serve less than a third of the sentence that he originally received. So I think Sweeney is right to be upset, not only about being shot, but about the criminal justice system that has given second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth time chances to violent offenders who clearly cannot stay within the confines of the law. This, unfortunately, is not a blue state only phenomenon. I mean, this happens in every state of the country. And it is one of the reasons why we have no shortage of these recidivist report stories to tell you about each and every day. Thankfully, we also have no shortage of defensive gun uses to talk about on this program. And today's comes from Monroe County, Kentucky. You don't have a lot of information here. It happened back on August 18th. Police say a 50-year-old man named Scott Udy tried to break into a home, I guess successfully managed to break into that home in Monroe County, Kentucky. Confronted by the intruder, Udy allegedly did not leave the area, and in fact continued to pose a threat to the intruder, who fired shots at Udy, who was taken to a local hospital when police arrived. Udy was pronounced dead at the scene. Kentucky State Police are still investigating, but again, just based on the circumstances here, as long as all the evidence matches what the witness and the victim had to say, there's no way that a homeowner is going to be facing charges for defending himself from somebody who forcibly broke into their home, apparently with violent intent. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A 19-year-old in Minnesota who helped save a man who was choking during a grocery store's birthday celebration. I've never been to a Hy-Vee grocery store. Never, I guess, been in the area where a Hy-Vee is located. But if I am ever in Owatonna, Minnesota, I'm going to stop by and I'm going to try to shake Owen Thoreau's hand. He's the 19-year-old in question. He's a service manager there at the grocery store. And back on, I think this was July 16th, as the store is holding its anniversary party, the 83-year-old man starts choking on food. That's when Owen jumped into action. You can see him there in the bottom center of your screen. He's got the red shirt, black pants. He's got his arms wrapped around the gentleman in the white shirt. Took about 15 seconds for Owen to perform the Heimlich maneuver and dislodge the food in that gentleman's throat. Owen went on to comfort the man's daughter, who was obviously freaked out by watching her dad struggle to breathe. And again, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing to help out a man in need. Owen Thoreau, we thank you for your very, very good deed. Now, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I do want to give you one update. You know, we were talking yesterday on the program about this new policy in D.C., where supposedly the U.S. Attorney's Office is not going to be charging people with felonies for carrying rifles or shotguns in the district. And I said there are a lot of questions just about the parameters of this that need to be, I think, specifically spelled out so that gun owners don't accidentally get into trouble. So I have submitted an email to the U.S. Attorney's Office in D.C. asking for that clarification. Specifically, when we talk about rifles and shotguns, does that include rifles and shotguns that are considered so-called assault weapons under D.C. law? Will the U.S. Attorney's Office not prosecute anybody carrying an AR-15, for example? The Associated Press had a story saying that the policy also covers, quote-unquote, large-capacity magazines, but they didn't say anything about what kind of rifles or shotguns might be covered. And D.C. does ban a wide variety of them under its assault weapons ban. So asking for clarification about that, what long guns can be covered or can be carried, rather? Also, does this policy apply? Because U.S. Attorney Pirro had mentioned specifically registered rifles and shotguns. So I asked, does this policy apply to individuals who don't live in the district, who have not registered their rifles or shotguns with the Metropolitan Police Department, but who do lawfully own the rifles and shotguns that they might be carrying? They might have brought them in from Maryland or Virginia or one of the other 48 states. Are they able to carry in D.C. Without running the risk of a felony arrest and prosecution? Now, these aren't gotcha questions, and they're not hypotheticals either. I've already seen posts on X from people saying, hey, now's the time for an open carry march in D.C. If one takes place, I want to make sure that everybody's operating within the parameters of this policy, so that there is no mistaken belief that what they're doing is okay with the DOJ when, in fact, it is not okay. So just made that information request earlier today. I don't expect to hear back anything until at least this afternoon, probably tomorrow, maybe Monday at the earliest. But we will certainly let you know when and if the U.S. Attorney's Office gets back to us with that information. All right. That's going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. In fact, that's going to do it for this week's worth of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. But we will be back on Monday with more of the latest Second Amendment news and information. And, of course, you can continue to get that information at BearingArms.com throughout the rest of the day today, Friday, over the course of the weekend as well. I would encourage you to do so. And if you like what you see, I'd also encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold or VIP Platinum member. Use the promo code FIGHT and you can get 60% off of your membership. And we certainly do appreciate your support. It is critically important to us being able to continue to do our mission. So thank you again. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll see you back here on Monday. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.